In some ways, the passion and the suffering of Jesus are like an iceberg, in the sense that an iceberg has a small part on the surface that everyone can see, a small part that's visible, and then a much larger, deeper, more profound part hidden under the surface that we can't see. And so in the passion of Jesus, that little part that we can see is his physical suffering, everything that happens to his body. And in that little part, he's just like tens of thousands of other people who were crucified by Rome. In that little part, there isn't anything particularly unique happening. After one rebellion, Rome crucified 6,000 people at once along the Appian Way, lining the road. It would have been 100 miles of crucifixion, one after another. And so in everything that happened to his body, Jesus was just like all of those and countless others. But that deeper suffering comes from who he is as God. His physical suffering comes from who he is as man, but his interior suffering, the part we can't see, that we can't make an image of, that we can't paint or sculpt into a crucifix, is inside and is far greater. And that interior suffering comes directly from who Jesus is, that he is fully God and fully man, that he has two complete natures, and that each one of them does everything that's proper to it. So that means that for Jesus, his suffering doesn't start with the scourging. It doesn't start with the crown of thorns. It doesn't start with the first hammer blow, but it starts on Thursday night after the Last Supper in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he goes to pray and sweats blood and says, "My soul is sorrowful even unto death." Because in the garden, in his divine nature, which can see all things, which knows all things, that sees all of time at once, Jesus is choosing to see every person individually, so that he can choose to die for that person. And so when he goes to pray in the garden, that is what he's doing. He's seeing everyone that's ever lived. He's seeing each one of us as an individual and choosing us. And he also, because he sees everything, he sees our response, and he sees all of the responses through history. He sees all of the sin through history. All of the indifference, all of the coldness. He sees all of the times that his love will be offered and rejected. And so all of that is going on because he is God and sees everything at once. And then because he is truly man, he has a human nature, he has a human heart, he feels the pain of all of that. It hurts us enough to be rejected by one person at a time, but he sees all of it from all of history, from the fall of Adam and Eve to the last sin before the final judgment. He sees all of it at once, and he feels it in his heart. And he loves us with a human heart that loves perfectly, in a way that none of us can. Being God doesn't make Jesus less human. It makes him more human in some ways. It makes him feel things more fully, not less fully, because there's no sin in his heart to get in the way of love. And so he feels everything even more strongly than we would. And so just very concretely, I can't wrap my mind around how much Jesus' heart must have broken to see Judas hang himself, to see this man that he had loved for 3 years, who'd spent every day with him, despair and give up. I can't imagine how that hurt the heart of Christ. And so one practice for this Holy Week, to maybe focus on this week, but then to carry on into the rest of your life, is devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And the core of that devotion comes from that truth that his human heart is perfectly united to his divinity. And so his human heart sees all things at once. He's outside of time. He sees it all at one time. Which means, of course, like I already said, that in the garden, on the cross, he sees our coldness. But the good news is that it means he also sees our love. That just as he sees the times we choose to leave him, the times that we're indifferent to him, he also sees all of the little ways that we choose to offer him love, that we choose to make little sacrifices. And so our love now can comfort him then, because he sees all time as one. So when Jesus is alone on the cross, my love now can console his heart then. When he is in the garden, praying for his cup to pass him by, your love now can console him then. And so that's what our tradition means by the word reparation, that we offer love now for the places it was lacking in the past. That by choosing to love Jesus now, I can offer some little amount of love to make up for what was missing at another time. And so when we do that first for ourselves, for our own coldness, for our own sin, for our own indifference, and then for others. Whether it's for those who were participating in his passion or for all of those things throughout history, we can offer love in reparation to console Jesus for those things. We can make this prayer our own and say, Jesus, I did not love you then, but I will love you now.